Warning, things are about to get intense. Like when you stare into the eyes of someone that you really like for a full minute straight without blinking. Intense, intense heat, lasting plump from the hot new Lifter Plump from Maybelline, New York. Formulated with chili pepper, Lifter Plump delivers a heated sensation for an instant lip plumping effect that lasts. Available in 8 sizzling shades. Honestly, my favorite is hot honey and cocoa zing. I put it on my lips and honestly, it did sizzle them. It sizzled them right to the moon. They were plump and juicy and everyone was like, Nicole, can I? And I'm like, get in line. Can you take the heat? Find your shade at Maybelline.com or a retailer near you. Amazon shoppers get 10% off Lifter Plump purchase with code 10PLUMP for a limited time.
Stay connected this winter with this unbeatable deal from Breezeline. Get reliable, fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month with all-in pricing for 2 years. But that's not all. Your first month is on us. This deal gets better with a free modem and installation, along with free Wi-Fi your way whole home coverage. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and keep all your devices connected and secured with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires March 3rd, 2024. Learn more at Breezeline.com.
Why Won't You Date Me? A podcast where me, Nicole Byer, tries to figure out how I'm still single, even though you could take away all of my wigs and weaves and tell me I have to be a bald-headed bitch, and I would do it reluctantly. My guest today, oh boy, I'm very excited. She is a friend. You've seen her on The Good Place. She stars on Why Women Kill. She was on Veronica Mars, Barry, Big City Greens, Killing Eve, Love, Alone Together. Oh my God. Oh, the Powerpuff Girls. What a day treat. It's Kirby Hal Baptiste.
I tried to do the horn like, rah, rah, rah. Oh, there, I did it. Okay.
Yeah, you did it. It sounded great.
Okay, perfect.
Thank you so much for doing this. This is so, I'm so happy that we finally found time because you have truly not stopped working. Truly, like 2019, I never saw you because you were working so much.
Yeah, 2019 was very, very, very busy. It was almost like I was banking up all the busyness for an incredibly not busy 2020.
Yeah, 2020 truly for me, I don't know if it was for you, started with like a bang and like things were happening and then the world went, ooh, bitch, you got to take a nap for 4 months or however. Yeah. Wait, what? So March, April, May, my God, it's been a long time.
A long time. I had the same thing. I was like, 2020 is the year. Like 2019, though I worked a lot, like felt like a bit of a like, I don't know. I felt like this is the only way I can describe it. 2019, I felt like I was in a washing machine the entire year, just getting tossed around. And I felt like I just like didn't know what was what. And I was like, no more. 2020.
I mean, that's how long it's been.
But I was like, it's going to happen. I've made the longest plan for the year or mood board or whatever you want to call it, like vision board. And I was like, that's it. I'm taking back 2020. And there was no taking back 2020. But I will say what I do think is that I have already had a better 2020 than 2019 because I have felt more in control. And I do feel like, I mean, not in some ways not, but I feel like a number of things have happened in 6 months that have completely rocked me. But I feel very like, oh, maybe collectively we're all like graduating or growing up a little bit.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. Like, I feel like in the beginning of quarantine and the beginning of COVID-19, I was a little spiraling and I was like, my whole world is very much rocked. I don't know how I'm going to do anything. But I kind of figured out that I needed to take a little bit of a break. Like, I came to the conclusion that, like, I can't tour every fucking weekend of the year.
Yeah.
That's not good for my soul. And I was, like, I truly just figured out my period. I am old. I'm, like, 59 years old, and I just figured out my period. I was talking to my therapist, and I was like, oh, my God, I feel crazy and irrational 1 week, and then the next week I'm craving potatoes. Like, for the, I was craving tater tots, and I ate tater tots every day for a week, and I was like, but I'm not pregnant. Why am I craving things? And then my period came, and I was telling my therapist about that, and she said, Nicole, have you ever thought about PMS? And I was like, what do you mean? She was like, do you think maybe you're premenstrual before your period? And this is why you're a little irrational and angry sometimes and hungry for things. And I was like, huh, I never thought I was the bitch from a Dove commercial who was like orgasmed over chocolate, but I am. I am that bitch. And it's not chocolate. It's tater tots.
Oh my God. It's such a real thing though, that people don't realize. Also, speaking of figuring out periods, it's not easy because I ran out of my Nuva ring when I was in London, so I'm not on it. So I don't know when that thing's coming. I don't know when to expect her. I don't know what's happening. I don't know how often she comes, because the Nuva ring told me it was like every 3 weeks you take it out, you pop a new one in. Like, it told me. But I also think that, like, we're so used to, as women, having to deal with everything that you can't even, like, I don't know. Even when I think, like, is this PMS? I don't make room for it. I'm like, no, just, you know, you just have to get on with it. But it's like, hey, there's a hormonal thing happening every single month. It's a huge deal. Yes. And people are just like, you're meant to just, I mean, yes, we do carry on. Like, sometimes when I am PMSing, I walk around and I'm like, there are so many women. Like, let's say I was like at a UCB show. Mm-hmm. There are so many women in that show or in that audience who are all having their period at the same time and just have to act like they're fine. Just like, I have to do it. I get on with my life. Even though my hormones are literally making me gain weight and crazy for the next 3 days.
And it's something that men will never understand, that we are fully bleeding out tiny little cups and walking around like we're normal. Like, it's fine.
Like, it's normal. Just, you know, like, oh, you spent a little while in the toilet. Yeah, I was bleeding profusely.
Yeah, I was bleeding. And then, oh my God, I started using a Diva cup, and I started like a year or two ago, and it kept like turning over.
Oh,
and, like,
my, the spilling Diva cup out. Is the most unruly thing. I use a Diva cup. I use it for so long because I was like, it's best for the environment. And I was such an advocate. I really wanted it for myself. And I use it for about a year and would also have to use pads because that damn thing would always tip. Oh my God.
Yes, it was. But then I figured it out. It wasn't opening up all the way in me. So it would just be like half open, and then the blood would be like, oh, we free bleeding. We having a good ass time. We can just go everywhere. Oh, we going to paint the underwear walls. Okay. And then I like figured it out and was like, oh God, yeah, fuck. And then I was like, don't get mad. Don't get upset about it. No. It's a journey. Nobody takes the time to like teach us stuff. Like, it's all like a journey of self-discovery. Mm-hmm. Oh boy.
By the way, Nicole, your hair looks amazing.
Thank you. I did this.
I know, because I saw it on Instagram. I'm so, so excited and so proud of you. I think it looks amazing. And I can't believe, because you never used to do your own hair before this quarantine, did you? That's crazy.
So you had done, I think it
I do my
have
own
been...
hair because I'm cheap.
You're also good at it. I think it was like maybe crocheted, like a crocheted fro or something. And I was like, dang, where do you get your hair done? You're like, I did it. And I was like, oh my God. And then you, I think, had twists at one point or braids. I don't remember, but I was like, well, Kirby can do it. I can figure it out. So this is honestly the best
it's really
set
good.
Of braids that I've done ever.
It's really good. Also, once these braids are out, I'm going to do a crochet. So if you want to do a crochet over the video together, I can show you and we can do it together remotely. I'm going to do a crochet after, if you want like a crochet
honestly.
Mohawk.
Would love that. Also, yeah. You're currently in your closet. Wow, you've got a lot of fucking fun stuff. I see. Is there a turtle? Is that a turtle?
Oh, that's a turtle hat that I bought from a Goodwill. Let me show you. I bought this from Goodwill in Pittsburgh one day because we decided very on an impromptu day. look at his eyes.
This is fucking funny. It's a foam turtle head.
I got this foam turtle head because when Aiden and I were filming in Pittsburgh, Aiden, who was also on your show, which I'm still annoyed was canceled. Hello, I'm still annoyed. Aiden, Mary, we rest in peace. we've all had a show canceled. You know, my Pittsburgh show was also canceled.
Wait, was this
Downward Dog?
Yes, yes, yes.
Erased from the files. You can't even find it anywhere. Hulu, where does
which
it exist?
Which is so nowhere. Crazy because I feel like it got like good reviews, and then they were like, "Hey, bye bye."
Yeah, it did. I think it like critically got some good reviews. I don't know if the views were great. I don't know, but I also don't know why they pick up and renew or don't. I don't know.
It's very confusing. Networks are very confusing because they'll renew shows that you're like, I've never heard anybody one time talk about
this.
No one. And then things that you hear people talk about, they're like, well, cancel. And you're like, what?
Goodbye. Yeah. They do their own thing.
C'est la vie.
Anyway. C'est la vie. Yeah, look at this.
I fucking love it.
A mess. There's too much in here. I've had a moment where I'm like, I have to get rid of some of this stuff. My nan passed away recently and we're still dealing with clearing out a lot of her things. And it made me, I fully had like, went into like an existential spiral. I say spiral. It wasn't actually a spiral. I don't know if it was like enlightenment, but I was like, you just can't take any of it with you. Why am I accumulating more? I just don't want any more stuff. Yes. Like I've just got so much stuff. And if anything happens, which could happen at any point, my friends and family just have to deal with all of my shit as well as all the paperwork.
Yep. It is a lot. Like after my mom died first, then my dad died. And after my mother died, we truly didn't clean anything out. Like we didn't get rid of any of her shit. Her purse was still where she left it for years. And then after my dad died, cleaning out that fucking house was a nightmare. It was like, what were you keeping this for? Yeah. Why did you have this? And I like things because my mother liked things, but I'm trying to get in the habit of being like, well, this thing I literally don't ever wear. I don't even look at this anymore. I have to throw this away.
Yeah. Okay, feel free to do whatever you want with this, but did your parents die
No.
Of each other? No.
Mm-mm. It was 5 years apart.
That's close, Nicole. I never knew that. That's really close. And you were a kid, right?
I was 16 and then 21.
That's
so young.
Really close. That's my sister-in-law has a similar thing. Both her parents died. And actually similar ages. Her dad died first, though, and then her mom died when she was 16. But she lost her dad when she was younger. But that's really young.
Yeah, it's dealing with death is tough and nobody teaches you or warns you about it, which I think is not great. But, you know, I mean, you got to learn some things on your own. But not that I'm obsessed with death, but I do think about it a lot. And I was watching 13 Reasons Why because I love it. I love horny teens. And there was a moment in the episode I was watching last night where one of the characters was like, are you afraid to die? And I like really thought about it. And I was like, I don't think I'm afraid to die. I think what I'm not like, I guess it's like a FOMO. I'm like, oh, everyone's going to keep doing fun shit and I'm sleeping forever.
Yes. Well, my nan who raised me with my mom, like my nan and my mom are my parents. And I feel like I watched my nan like progressively. She had cancer, so it wasn't sudden. Mm-hmm. And I had that same when I like I remember one time I was outside McConnell's ice cream. My boyfriend and I had stopped to get ice cream and I was high, obviously, and we needed ice cream. And I was like just chatting about my nan. And it's not really great to talk about grief when you're high. It's like great-ish, but sometimes not great. Cause sometimes you're like, it's great because your mind goes to these places. And then other times you just like peek through a little door then you realize you weren't meant to open that door. Yes. And then you can't stop. Mm-hmm. So then I like clicked for me in this moment and I was like, she just wants to be here. All she wants mm-hmm. is to be here. It's a thing she can't have, and it's what she wants. And she just wants to be, she doesn't want it, like, everything will keep going without her. And that's mm-hmm. so scary, because my Nana is also such a people person. Like, she just loved her family and loved people and is all that. And I was like, that's exactly what it is. It's not the fear. It's also like, man, mm-hmm. I have the same thing of like, it's missing out. I don't even know if it's missing out. My thing is that I'm like, oh, it's so sad when someone dies. And if I go, I'll make so many people, not to be like,
you egotistical, would make so many people, sad.
Really sad. Like, yeah. Really, really sad. And that's so awful. Like, the what I'm feeling, I'm like, oh, I don't want everyone to feel that. And then mm-hmm. I also had this moment of like, fuck, I'm gonna have to keep feeling this. Cause I think I'm lucky because I didn't experience a close death until now. So until mm-hmm. my 30s. But then I think about like, oh, fuck, I experienced it so late. Now it's like going to be nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
Because loads of the people are old. Like,
yeah, that's the thing. Like, once you experience loss, you realize, oh, this is a thing that I'm going to, it repeats. It's not Groundhog Day exactly, but it will happen again and again and again. Yeah. And it doesn't stop until you die.
Yeah.
I'm not like obsessed with death, but I do think about it a lot, and like mortality and trying to like live every day with doing at least a couple joyful things, because it might be the last thing I do. But I also have like a living will, because if you have any sort of property, any sort of money, everyone should have a living will, because my dad didn't have one, and assets revert back to the state, and then you have to like do so much fucking work, and you're already also sad. But in my will, you can't enforce shit like this in your will, but I wrote, at my funeral, I want everyone to have gone through my closet and pick out one of the dumbest items I own, and I want them to wear it, because I was like, it would be so, whoever speaks, it would be so wonderful for them to look out at a bunch of people wearing the dumbest shit.
Yeah.
Like, oh, Kirby, I think I told, we were like on a text chain about RuPaul's Drag Race and other stuff. I said, I was like, I want, or maybe I just told you, I was like, I want to recreate Crystal Method's
the
red
latex.
Patent leather latex outfit. I did it. I found someone in, where are they? Russia, to make it. And it's big and dumb and fabulous. Oh. And I was like, yeah, I would love for someone to wear that after I'm gone and find like the joy it brought me, be able to transfer that joy.
Yes.
So I think about that a lot. It's interesting.
I have always sort of been curious about death and not afraid to talk. I listen to a lot of podcasts about death, not just like gory ones, but just like about death. And like, there's one that I really like. I think it's not This American Life. It might be, it's called Dying Well. I can't remember what mm-hmm. podcast it is, but that's the name of the episode. And it is, it's an NPR podcast, but like there's that. And they talk about that we should talk about death more. The will thing, my nan had a will, and I think that's great. And I told my mum before I left, I was like, we all need to have a will. Like mm-hmm. exactly what you're saying. We just have to have a will, because it's so hard to die. And then it's like, so, I didn't realize how hard it was when the government gets it. It's so difficult to just, you're not like, even if you're sort of at peace, your family are not.
Nope.
And you can't even grieve fully. So mm-hmm. I think that's important. But I also think that you, Nicole, are really good at that. You're really, really good at like finding joy every single day. You are one of the most joyful people I know.
Oh,
and I
Kirby,
think,
thank
no,
you.
No, but that's so cool. Cause like, I think I'm joyful, but I honestly think, and maybe this is part of why we have to talk about death more. Like, I honestly think since this thing happened to me this year, I am much more like, yeah, let's just do that. Yeah, let's just do that. Okay, mm-hmm. let's just, but I felt like, I guess you just don't know you're on a ticking clock until you see it. And, but mm-hmm. it's like, but you're on a ticking clock. You are.
Yes. Yeah. And lately, especially with like, I mentioned this on a different episode, but since like COVID started, I've been like, well, why don't I just do everything I've ever wanted to do that I can? Yeah. Like, as opposed to like sitting and watching TV, why don't I go try to learn how to roller skate for an hour?
Yeah.
When you stand on the skates for a little bit longer, like I feel accomplished and like I did something and I had fun doing it. Like learning how to ride a motorcycle, that was always like a thing I wanted to do. And I was like, well, what am I waiting for? Why don't I just try it?
I desperately want, I was thinking about getting a motorcycle this week because I really want to learn how to ride. How is it? Are you terrified?
Oh, my God. Okay. So,
because I need to know, because I literally, like, my boyfriend rides a motorcycle and I was like, I'm going to get one. And in London, I was talking so much smack about, like, as soon as I get back, we're getting a motorbike because I want to ride around and I don't want to be in the back of it. And then I got back and he was like, so should we go and get it? And I was like, I don't want to die.
It is inherently dangerous. But I will say, it's a lot. So it's a lot. Like, you have to practice because in order to switch gears, you have to, like, pull the clutch, let go of the gas. And it's a lot of, like, hand-eye coordination. But, like, once it's in your body, it's easy. Yeah. But that being said, I haven't ridden in a while because I was like, God forbid something happens and I have to go to the hospital and there's a bunch of COVID-19 cases.
Yes.
No, thank you.
Yeah, no, thank you. Not right now. Okay, well, you've inspired me. And I also, danger is relative. Like, once you know what you're doing, it's less dangerous.
Mm-hmm. And if you wear protective gear, a good-ass helmet. Also, this is a thing I didn't know until I took a class. If you have an accident and smack your helmet on the ground, you have to immediately get another one because it stops absorbing the shock of impact. And I was like, holy shit, that's wild. I wonder if it's the same thing with cars. Like, if you hit a car and then you just have it rebuilt, is it as safe? I don't know.
Oh, it must not be. Even if the airbag doesn't come out, it's like a little damaged now.
Right? That's what I feel like. I don't know. We're all living in a death trap that is the world. So I want to ask you were in London for a while. And did you, were there protests in London? I know there was like a ton of protests like around the world because of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. And honestly, just like years and years of oppression and systemic racism and implicit bias and whatnot. And we were like, you know, it's boiled to a head. None of us have jobs. Let's get out and like make our voices heard.
Yeah.
Were there protests in London?
There were protests. I'll tell you what there were. There were protests regarding police brutality. What there were not were protests just to not wear masks. We didn't have those. We didn't have anyone just like, hey, we really don't want to wear a mask. We didn't have that.
It was so nuts to see it on the news and to see all the videos of the people being like, I'm an American. I belong in Costco maskless. And I'm like, people asked you to wear a shirt and shoes for service.
Right.
We're just adding another layer of something you got to wear to be in public.
Not that big a deal. Also, you only have to wear it whilst you're shopping. Take it off the moment you get in the car. No big deal.
Yes, or take it off when you're in the store, because that's what I've seen people do. I don't think it's the best thing to do, but like, you don't have to argue with everybody.
Yeah. It's kind of crazy. I saw a photo of like a bunch of obviously white people at like Daytona Beach, or they were like, do you see that picture that people just crammed in? And in my mind, I was like, that's not even comfortable. I don't even care about COVID. Just fucking butt cheek to butt cheek with everyone. It was so crazy.
It's like a child trying to make a point where they're like, I love mustard. I'm going to make a mountain of mustard on my hamburger. And then you're like, well, you've now made this hamburger inedible. Nobody needs to know how close you want to be with people because you are upset that there's a virus that we don't know anything about that we can't control. It's so
American. But America is a teenager. I do think like people forget that like its history is not that long. At least it's like colonial history is not that long, which is what we are part of. It's not very long. It's a teenager. And so it acts like a teenager. Like it throws tantrums and it bullies people. And it's kind of just like a teenager that kind of, I guess its parents are across the ocean and were like, okay, fine. You want to be an adult? Emancipate yourself. You can be an adult. And they're like, yeah, fine. We will be adults. But
yeah, we're going to be adults. And and we're gonna have slaves. And and we're not going to be nice to the slaves after we let them go. You know, it's like the shittiest kid in class is
it really
America.
Is. Yeah. But we did have like legitimate protests regarding police brutality, which is an issue all over the world, not just in America. I think it's heightened in America because of America's very recent history and because of the fact that police can have guns and have so little training before becoming police. But we did have that, and we have had our own incidents of police brutality, like in 2012, I think it was, Mark Duggan was a young man who was killed by police in police custody, and his family weren't told for some hours, and that is what kicked off what were called the London riots. But again, it wasn't a riot. It's an uprising. It's so crazy that it's like, these are riots. It's like, people have a right to not want themselves or other people to be killed by the people that are meant to protect us. It's not really a riot. Yes. A riot is like what happens when people's football teams lose and they trash a place. That's a riot.
And people don't talk about that enough, that there's a full difference. Like, you were mad that your football team lost. I'm mad because my child went to the store to pick up Skittles and didn't come home.
And that guy who shot him is signing packs of Skittles for fun.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
It's so wild to me. And honestly, like, in England and London, have there been, like, because I assume you follow, like, maybe English people on Twitter and shit? I don't know. Have there been, like, a ton of videos of, like, white people being overtly racist and screaming at these people with camera phones?
No. Well, what there have been. Oh, you mean the Karen, Becky, Chad situations?
Yes, yes. But I like the way Amanda Seals put it, where it's like, they're not Karens, they're terrorists. And I was like, mm-hmm.
Yeah, they are terrorists.
Karen's a cute name for a fucking terrorist.
It is. It is. Well, I do follow some English people, and I haven't seen a lot of that. But what I have seen, I love Reddit. I absolutely love Reddit. And so I go onto Reddit, public freakout subreddit, and you see a lot of stuff. And there have been recently a lot of, because I also think that, like, if I'm honest, the racism in England is so cloaked, and cloaked so very well and so subtle, that you might just miss it. I think the thing about American racism, for the most part, outside of, like, liberal elite racism, is that it's very overt, the rest of it. And so it's really easy to spot. Which is nice, because it's easy to spot even for white people. You know, it's there. What I think is harder is, like, the very subtle liberal racism, which I think is what the UK, or at least London, has a lot of, which most, I think most metropolitan cities have. But what I'm seeing more and more is people posting things where the police are stopping them, and because obviously because they're black. So it, most of them aren't violent. They haven't escalated to violence, but they are incidents. Because I know, like, when I was at home during this quarantine, my mom, my brother and I went for a bike ride, and it was so interesting. Like, the three of us were just out having a lovely, happy little bike ride. And I don't know if I wouldn't have noticed it before, but there were so many people that looked at us where I'm like, we're literally just riding a bike. But if it's one black person, it's okay. If it's one black person and a white person, then they've been neutralized and they're safe. Yes. But three black people, and one of them's like,
that's a gang.
A giant black man. That's a gang.
That's a gang.
Exactly.
They're coming to get me.
My poor little mum, like, people were looking at us like we were a gang. And I'm like, look at this lady. She can barely ride her bike.
It's so funny that, like, I know me personally have become numb to people staring at me. When I was younger, I would be like, oh, it's people are staring at me because I'm the only black person in the room. In high school, I would be the only black person in a room, and we watched Roots instead of a teacher talking about racism and talking about slavery. He was like, play, so I don't have to fucking do the work. And I was like, I mean, is Kunta Kinte really going to teach these white people? But every day when he would turn the lights on, everyone would look at me. And I was like, oh, I don't have, like, a statement. Like, I don't have
I'm not the spokesperson. You know, I didn't write this movie.
Yeah, and I was like, also, I've already seen Roots. We're all 17. I know a little bit more than you because I have to.
Yeah.
You have to know your history. But with all these videos, I can't help but wonder, like, some of these people are mothers or fathers. Like, do their kids scroll through Twitter and then their mother comes home disheveled and you're like, Mom?
I know. Like, it's so, imagine how mortified you'd be if you saw your mom just, like, yelling at someone. I've watched so many of these and I'm like, oh my God, these people have full on families and they are acting such a fool. It's crazy. It's also just, like, not for anything. It's different if it was, like, you know, but these people are just, you know, like, I watched one today where an Asian girl was exercising and this woman, have you seen that one? What the hell is going on? Like, why would you do that? What actually goes through your mind?
Yeah, I mean, I got into a fight with a white man at a gym. I don't know if I've ever talked about this on the podcast, but so I was doing kettlebell swings in this little hallway at LA Fitness where people will like take those like jazz steps and do like step ups and weightlifting just away from the weight room and like people being like, yeah. So I was like doing kettlebell swings and this guy walked literally right where I was about to swing and I went, Jesus Christ, specifically because I was like, I could have hit you.
Yeah.
Be more aware. And then he stomped in his tracks, doubled back and said, what the fuck did you say to me? And I said, Jesus Christ. You walked into where I was swinging. He's like, well, you shouldn't be swinging back here. And I was like, there are four other people back here. It is a gym. I can be wherever I want. And he's like, well, maybe you need to come to the gym more, you fat black bitch. And I was like, wait, what? And I was like, what did you say to me? And I was like, I will fucking crack your skull with this. And then he scurried away. And because I was advancing with a very heavy weight at this man. And I was like, and then this other woman, she popped up and she was like, she did nothing wrong. She did nothing wrong. And then he like was away. And she was like, I was going to get up and I was going to do something too. And I was like, bitch, you're still on your butt. You weren't going to
do anything. I was gonna. I need you now. I don't need I was gonna.
But it was a white woman who I think in the moment, like, just didn't know what to do. She just knew that, like, he was wrong and that it escalated rather quickly. And I was holding a literal weapon. And I was like, should I go to the front desk? But I just like huffed and puffed and was like, I have to leave. Also, he could have said fat bitch, but I heard black bitch. But who knows? You know.
I think if there's any ambiguity, I mean, he's still a piece of shit, right?
Yes.
Like, who,
yes.
Over which, what verb he used, is he's still a piece of shit.
Yeah.
But I will say, and you can't see the situation again, but like, I wonder if she would have got up quicker if it was a white person. Because I do feel that, like, mm-hmm. white people, like, because white pain is a thing that we see and is normal, it's mm-hmm. something that people are very attuned to and will be excited to end. Like, we don't want mm-hmm. any white people to be in pain. We don't want it to be uncomfortable. I'm going to stop him from being whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But there has been a number of incidents where I am in an argument with someone where something has happened. Not a number. It's like, you know, you can count on your hands because as a black person, things like this happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
And you think, oh, it's so crazy that no one is coming to my aid. Okay, so like, speaking of like racism in fitness, so mm-hmm. like ages ago I was training for the LA marathon. I ran it like 6 years ago now, 7 years ago. Anyway, I was running along the Bologna bike trail, which is a trail that goes from Culver City all the way to the beach to like, you
oh
can
God.
Like, it's really beautiful and it's like a great mm-hmm. way to run because then you don't have any, you know, but it's a bike trail as well as a running trail. At the halfway point where I was meant to turn back and start running, it was a 10-mile run and I'd done 5 and I was turning back. I turned back and there was this bike, a white woman on a bike who was speeding, flying down this, although it's a shared path, so you're not meant to go mm-hmm. at like Olympic speed. She's flying down the path. I turned to go back. She, I guess, had gone on the other side to overtake people. So she was on the wrong side and we mm-hmm. crash into each other. I go flying. She falls off her bike. But meanwhile, obviously, she was on a bike. So she has a helmet. Mm-hmm. She has this. She has that. I hit my head.
Ugh.
And I am sprawled out on this bike trail. About 5 white people rush to this woman's aid, rush to her, make sure she's okay. They're touching her. They're like, you know, don't move. Do you need help? And I'm just lying there. And I can't get up because I'm dizzy and I'm dazed, and the mm-hmm. only person who came to help me was this little black lady who I always used to see because she would power walk and I would say hi, and I used to do this mm-hmm. run every Saturday, and so we'd always say hi to each other, and she is luckily was going past at that time, and she was the only person who stopped for me.
That's fucking insane.
That's to say about bias is that no one would have
yes.
thought we're rushing to a white woman's aid because she needs us. It's in their mind, they're like, the person who needs help is getting help. But it,
yes.
in I think honestly, maybe that was like 7 years ago. That was such a weird turning point in my life and in my understanding of race in general, but also mm-hmm. in America, of like, you know, I would say that I recognize my own privilege in that I am from somewhere else, like I have an accent, so if you hear my mm-hmm. accent, most people treat me better. And I mean, I've had seen women grab their handbags and then when they hear my accent loosen up because
Ooh.
Being English makes me seem more white. Ooh. So I've seen so
yes,
I understand that
God.
But in that moment when you don't have the privilege of having an accent, whatever, you can see how you are seen, and in that moment I fully saw how I was seen and it changed everything.
My God, that is so fucked up. That is so fucked up. Truly so awful. I'm so sorry that you had to go through that. It's an interesting thing, and I think it's good for, because I know a lot of white people listen to this podcast, and I think it's important for them to hear stories. I think it's important to hear it from the mouth to be like, we're not making this up. It's ingrained in the culture. It's a thing that, but it's a stain on America. It sucks.
Yeah, it sucks. And it's not just white. It's literally everyone. It's like, I was watching Darren Brown yesterday, Master Hypnosis. Don't know if you've seen him. He's a magician. I love magic.
Make a blanket statement, but I think all black people like magic. I mean, they're the best reactors when there's like street magicians. And I went to the magic castle and lost my mind.
I love magic. I genuinely love magic. So I was watching this thing. Basically, yesterday, Darren Brown was doing like this hypnosis. And he was talking about like if you keep, you know, presenting someone with this idea and their suggestion that over time you will believe it. Mm-hmm. And I realized, I was like, oh, we're all just hypnotized from birth. We're presented with the same ideas of people. Like we think it's just like, I'm privileged or that white person. It's because we have literally all been hypnotized by the system to believe a certain thing because it benefits, like hypnosis. You know, like there is sort of only one person that can, not necessarily one person, but for us, it's like a system or an idea that controls everything. So it makes sense for everyone else to be hypnotized. And I think we are all just sort of in a state of hypnosis, which I think we're trying to break out of, but it's going to take such a long
time. Yes, it will take a long time, but we all just have to do the work.
We do.
I think about that a lot. When I was a kid, I was like really obsessed with Whoopi Goldberg, and I would watch The Associate, Eddie, and Ghost, and Made in America over and over and over again. And I'm a creature of habit. I don't like change. So that's why like familiar things feel good. But I was like, oh, I guess... in my little brain, I was like, this woman is really funny and I'm laughing and she looks like me.
Mm.
That, like, as an adult, I realized how important representation is. And I think if I didn't have that Whoopi Goldberg, would I have thought that I could do this insane job that I'm very blessed and lucky to have? It's so crazy.
It's crazy. I used to watch a show called Three Non-Blondes, and it was three British comedians, and they would do sketches, like, you know, like on the street sketches, and they were so unbelievably funny. And I remember me and my friend wanted to do, like, we were like, we should go out and do that. We should, like, go and do street sketches. But it was some of the, and there was another show in England called The Real McCoy. And Real McCoy was basically like SNL, but all black people. It was sketches and stand-up, and it was all black people. And it was like revolutionary. And I watched that growing up, and then it just went away, which was so, so sad. But I know exactly what you mean, because my brother and I used to, we couldn't afford a video camera. So we had a little tape recorder, and we have so many tapes of us doing skits from The Real McCoy. But you're totally right. I don't even know until you said that, if I ever thought that, because people are like, you know, you want to be an actor. And I think I have a very supportive family that are like, yeah, go do it. But I think like, where does that idea come from? And now when I think about it, I think like, of course it's that. Of course it's like, I mean, I know seeing yourself, when you see it, you feel like you can be it. But on a personal level, I'm like, oh yeah, I used to sit and watch The Real McCoy. I think it was every Friday night, like religiously, my family would sit down and watch that. And Three Non-Blondes, I watched that every, like I was so, like, of course I saw myself doing comedy because I saw myself doing comedy.
Yeah. And my mom made sure that, like, I had white dolls, but I also had a ton of black dolls.
Yeah.
And I remember once I was like, I want more white dolls. And my mom was like, well, you're not a white girl. So why would you want to play with a white doll? Don't you want to play with something that looks like you? And I was like, oh, fuck, yes.
Yeah. But that's an early hypnosis, because it's probably like when you're a kid, you're seeing all these other white girls. Like, I remember doing ballet, and I was like a kid in ballet, and they used to make fun of me all the time. I was the only black kid in ballet, and the teachers even were relentless. But you know, ballet in London, in England as well, is like very, very classist, like extremely. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it is here, but England, where we very much have a classist, and there is one here too, it's just not spoken about. But I remember like my hair, my mom would obviously like cane row my hair. Also, we say cane row, you guys say corn row in America.
Oh.
But it's like rows of cane, rows of corn. Anyway, so, although your family are Caribbean, right?
Yeah.
My dad's family, that side's from Barbados.
Ah!
And then I know I've said this on the podcast, but I thought I was Native American for a solid, I don't know, decade of my life because my aunt was like, well, you know, because we're Indian. And then the door closed and I said, I'm Native American. She definitely meant West Indian.
West Indian, yeah. Also, Nicole, Barbados was, I went to Barbados a few years ago, best holiday of my entire life. We should go to Cropover. It's the best thing you've ever.
I want to go so bad.
It's the most incredible experience.
Oh, you posted pictures in the best outfits when you went?
It's the best.
Oh, it was such a treat for the eyes.
Oh, man. We'll all be Rihanna. It's the best. Just let's go.
Real quick, we have to take a break.
Okay.
Zendaya like you've never seen her before. From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes Challengers, where Zendaya stars as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy who makes no apologies for her game on and off the court. For more than a decade, she has former best friends Patrick and Art, played by Josh O'Connor, and Mike Feist under her spell. It's Tashi's game and Tashi's rules. See Challengers now playing only in theaters. Get tickets now at challengersmovie.com. Today and every day, Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Lawmakers who oppose abortion are attacking Planned Parenthood, which means affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. The right to control your body and get the health care everyone needs has been stolen. And now politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the sexual and reproductive care they need. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves health care. It's a human right. And that's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect your right to control your own body and against policies that interfere with decisions between patients and their doctors. Planned Parenthood needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, you can help reclaim your rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. That's PlannedParenthood.org/future. Wow! Join Macy's in an effort to shop more sustainably. With brands like Carter's Little Planet, Oak on 34th, Elemis, and more. Plus, to help bring more parks to more people, Macy's is supporting Trust for Public Lands Community Schoolyards Project, transforming vacant schoolyards into green spaces to help ensure healthy, livable communities for generations to come. Donate online or in store. And learn more at Macy's.com/purpose. 1 in 5 Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list. If that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel, the science-based language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 150 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. Guess what? I love to travel. And honestly, traveling is better when you can speak the local language. So, ordering food, asking for directions, or just saying, me encanta papi. I think I said, I love you, daddy. Anyway, people just treat you better when you speak their language. Plus, it's nice not having to consult language apps while on vacation because I'm having fun in the sun. Here's a special limited time deal for listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only from the listeners at babbel.com/date me. Get 55% off at babbel.com/date me. Spelled BABBEL.com/date me. Rules and restrictions may apply.
And we're back.
Yay.
We have spent a ton of time not talking about relationships, and that's what the dang podcast is about. But also, I like talking about race, and I think it's important and a necessary conversation. But I want to know, you have a boyfriend, and this is delightful. I love it.
It's delightful.
How did you guys meet?
We met at my manager's office, actually, because he was there for a self-tape and I was there to have a meeting. And I walked in and I saw him actually through the windows of glass. I saw him through his manager's office and I was like, oh, he's cute. And then I went in to chat with the guys who do the tapes and I was like chatting with them. And then he came over and was like, hi, you know. He told me his name, he introduced himself, and then he was like, what's your name? And then he was like, nice to meet you. We went our separate ways. And then I went into my manager's office and I was like, oh my God, who is that? And he was like, oh, you know, that's just, you know, John's client. And then I was like, oh, okay, whatever. And he is, you know, I don't want to be smug, but he's a beautiful black man. And mm-hmm. I feel like, unfortunately, and I know I am a beautiful black woman, but as a dark-skinned black woman, I think I've been conditioned to believe or see that a lot of black men will not pick me.
Yes.
So I was like, oh, okay, whatever. And then a week later, I got a text from my manager being like, so-and-so wants to go on a date with you. Is it okay if I give him your number? And I was like, hell yeah! But that's also part of the hypnosis on all parts. I mean, that's mm-hmm. like a 5-hour podcast into like race and conditioning and within yes. our own culture. But
oh, yes. Dark skin versus light skin. Like my mom was super, super light and they used to call her high yellow and shit like that. And it sucks. And my mom told me, my mom talked a lot about race. And at one point she was like, you know, after your sister was born, I would pray that you would come out the same color as her, not darker, not lighter, because you would just be treated so differently. Mm. And I was like, Jesus fucking Christ, imagine being pregnant and being so excited to welcome a child into the world. And then you have to already worry about their place in the world and how they're going to be discriminated against.
Yeah.
It's so crazy.
It's crazy. It's horrible.
This might be a personal question, but is this the first black man that you've had a long relationship with?
Yeah, this is only my second long relationship. I wouldn't count all the rest just because I'm generally scared of commitment. And if it's less than a year, that wasn't a relationship.
I'm different. I'm like, if it was 2 dates, it was a relationship. If you came back for seconds, it's one.
That's true. I think maybe less than 6 months. I think I would say less than 6 months. But I was as you know, but people may not, I was married for a long time. I got married really young. And so I was in that relationship. And then after that, I was like, no more relationships. And then I met my now partner. But yeah, this is not like this is the only black man I've been in a long-term relationship with. And it's the best. I won't lie to you, Nicole. It's the best relationship I've ever had. It's like so easy to talk. It's so, there's a common language. I don't feel like I'm looked at like it's not tokenism. I don't feel like there's this weird sort of like ownership, nor do I feel like there's a fetishization. I feel like there's just a true appreciation. And I think that like that's something that not a lot of people have or feel they have or feel that is like coming to them. And it makes me really sad. I think it makes me really sad as well in general that black women are truly the absolute most disrespected people in the entire world. I mean, like within and outside of our own culture, we are so unbelievably disrespected, and it makes me so sad because black women are so like so unbelievably intelligent, so accomplished, so loyal, so emotional, and it's painful.
Yeah, and it's a real trip to like, so my mom, when I started wearing makeup, would teach me to line my lips to make them look smaller. And she would also be like, stick your butt in so my butt wouldn't look as big. And it was like adhering to like European standards and whatnot, like But also on the flip side, my mom tried to keep my hair in braids and little bobbles for a very long time, and not flat iron my hair or press my hair out. And I just wanted that so bad. But then I was like, wait, big lips are now in?
I know. And
big butts are now in?
It's such a trick. And no one's even saying like, hey, thank you, black women, because yes. the beauty standard that you have, you know, brought to us and owned for years. I mean, similar, mm-hmm. we were talking about ballet. In ballet, I used to get teased mercilessly because I had a big butt, like mercilessly. It was like, mm-hmm. I wasn't skinny enough and this, like the other. And now we black women are the reason why plastic surgery has boomed. Like yes. why this is a multi-billion dollar yes. industry is literally because of us. And no one is going like, I remember my mom pointing this out, because when J-Lo first came out, people were like, she's mm-hmm. got a, they'd be saying like, a J-Lo butt, like, yes. oh, she's got a J-Lo butt. And my mom was like, a J-Lo butt? J-Lo has a black woman's butt. Yeah. Like, there's never any credit. And I also think like, no. we're in this time right now where I hope people are starting to be more honest, but I think like, it would really, really be honorable if some white people were literally like, I literally owe everything to black people. The look I am trying to achieve is that of a black woman.
Yes. I wouldn't mind it if someone was just like, yeah, I got my butt done because I love black women with fat asses. Yeah. I love that. I wear braids because black women wear braids and I like it. As yeah. opposed to like Kim Kardashian being like, Bo Derek braids is what she like wrote like a right. couple years ago. And it's like, no, it's not that. And things are considered ghetto or like low rent, low class until, you know, some designer puts gold teeth down Everything. The runway with chains yep. and shit.
Languages. It's
yes.
Yeah. I mean, I honestly just but that's the problem with white people as well. And that's the other thing to say about the disrespect of black women is that to not even to talk about. There are people who will be so attracted to white women who have paid to possess all the attributes of black women and mm-hmm. then still turn around and tell you that they don't find black women attractive.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the fucking tea. That is all tea, no shade. But that's the truth. That is like, that is, isn't that so crazy? And like, yeah. also maybe as black women, we have to understand, like we are so, and I think if we could take the idea that imitation is a sincerest form of flattery and know how mm-hmm. fucking bad we would then not allow other people to not treat us like the baddies that we are. Because mm-hmm. truly, the entire beauty standard, even though they don't want to say it's us, the beauty standard of the world right now is black women. It is.
Mm-hmm.
Although what they'll do is, it's black women that have been, it's the idea of blackness that has been co-opted by white people, and will, and that's what will be pushed to further keep us down and keep us feeling like mm-hmm. we don't exist.
Yeah, it's so fucking wild.
They can't erase us. They want to, but they can't.
They can't. We just keep coming back. We yep. won't be put down. Also, like, I've been told numerous times. I had this one manager for a while, and I don't know if I've told this story on the podcast, but there was a disagreement that I had with a network over what they were doing with something, and I didn't mince my words. I wasn't an asshole about it, but I said what I felt. I said what I thought they should do, and I was like, and that's for y'all to like, you know, think about whatever, come back to me when you have thoughts, whatever. And then my manager, maybe like 2 minutes after we got off the phone, texted me and was like, I think you should apologize. And I was like, what do you mean? He's like, for the way that you said everything, you really came off as a bitch. And I was like, would you tell one of your Whoa. White male clients that he was a bitch? Or would you say, wow, that was assertive and you're a boss? And it's yeah. just like, black women are, we're like, people paint us as like angry. We're angry. Yeah. And it's like, I can't remember who said it, but it was like, wouldn't you be angry too? If you were yeah. treated the way you were treated?
Yeah, we are definitely treated as angry, but I am here to say that I am angry. Like, I think yes. it is angering. It is angering when I truly, like, when I see people, like, it is angering to see how much is taken from us. You, of course, you would be angered.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that you walk around being like, I'm in a constant state of anger, but it's like, oh, if you want to talk about it, we can talk about it.
Yeah, and I don't know who I want to end up with, black, white, Puerto Rican, Mexican, whatever. Yeah. I just know that, like, I want to be with someone who, like, respects me and that I don't have to teach them anything.
Yeah,
like, I dated a dude who I said, I was like, you can pull my hair. And he was like, can I? And I was like, yes, we're sleeping together. And I asked you to pull my hair and you did. You like were very, he was very like, he like kind of gently tugged at it. And I was like, it's pinned down. I pinned this bitch down. You can pull on it. Okay. Let my scalp feel something. Okay. And then he was like, I just didn't know if I could touch it. And I was like, I don't want to have to teach you that if you're inside of me, you can touch my hair.
Right. Right.
It's the people who aren't inside of me. Right. I don't need them to touch it.
Right. And if you've clearly said it, because I've also had sex with a white guy where I'm like, if you ever, I'll kill you. Don't ever go near my hair, okay? I don't want you near it. You don't need to pull it. If I've given you permission, that's fine, but you don't need to.
Yes, but also, it's like I gave you permission.
You
just
gave permission. That's it. Yeah. It's hard. The teaching is hard in relationships because sometimes people slip through the cracks. Sometimes you get someone who's like, I know everything and I'm very woke, and they're lying to you. They're lying to you.
Yes. Yep. Anybody who's like, I know everything. It's like, okay. Like, I'm sure Rachel Dolezal could learn a thing or two.
Yeah.
I went into a Rachel Dolezal hole on her Instagram. And then I rewatched the interview where this interviewer is, my God, is the shadiest queen of all time. This man asked her like real questions about this like alleged hate crime that she was talking about for 5 straight minutes. And then at the end of the interview, pulls out a picture of a black man and goes, is this your dad? And she was like, yes. And then he was like, you mean to tell me this person is your dad? And she was like, yeah, that's what I said. He's like, are you African-American? And I was literally screaming because I watched the whole thing. I have time. And it's the face crack of the century. It is so funny. And now she's a hair braider. Honestly, she's a good hair braider.
She's a hair braider?
She's a good braider.
Oh,
but I will say,
God,
they're a little too tight. I'm like, you could loosen the grip a little bit.
Hers always look very tight.
Yes, very, very tight, which is,
yeah.
They don't need to be that tight.
No.
But it's just like, yeah, you want to be part of the black experience or whatever. You think you know everything. You teach Afro studies. But it's like, I don't know, a bunch of black people tell you, please don't.
Right.
You know, bronze yourself and put on an afro and say you're black. You can't listen and say,
right,
ah, okay, I won't.
Right. That's the craziest thing about it is being like, Rachel Dolezal could go freaking toe to toe with most people about race. She's read it all.
Yes.
I mean, she was pretty high up in the NAACP. She
was the president of the Spokane chapter. Isn't that nuts?
It's wild.
Imagine.
It's wild, but that is to show you that even someone who is the most educated can get it so wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
If you just don't listen to actual black people. Which
no,
I guess she
don't.
Would argue she is.
She's like, of course I'm listening. I'm one of you. And it's like, bitch, no! The only person that rivals her is this kid. I don't remember his name, but he was like 18 years old and he lied about being a doctor and was working in a hospital with patients, and he's a black guy, and I was like, you finessed the system. And then he got caught and then did it again, and I was like, this man, I love him.
I know. I'm here for it. One person could trick the system. One person beat the system. I'm with him.
Also, dating while being a black person in, like, we do improv, and improv is such a white space, and it bums me out
no
all
place
the time.
To find a partner.
And I think I was like really trying to dip in that pool. Not think, that's what I was like trying to do in my early 20s. And I was like, this is, it's so hard. And then you watch someone say something on stage that you're like, oh God, are you like racist? And then you're like, oh, it's fine off stage. He doesn't say shit like that. It's such a, it's tough to navigate spaces.
Yeah, I also think improv is unique because improv like has an implicit financial buy-in because there aren't many, particularly in New York, which you know, like how many people, I don't know very many people in New York who can afford to do, improv is essentially like hugely not essential. It's a fun thing, but it costs a lot of money and
you
requires a lot of time.
You literally pay $400 to go to a space to pretend.
To pretend.
You could do that in your living room.
You could, you know. You could be like, you could do follow the follower at home.
Yes.
You could make weird sounds in your bed. But we paid.
Yep,
I didn't pay. I paid for one set,
money.
And then I got some scholarship and whatever. But like, you pay for that, and then it requires an incredible amount of time. So what I realized coming out of it is that if not the majority, then at least probably half or 50% of the population of people doing improv, their parents still pay for a lot, if not most of their expenses. It's a very privileged world. So it's a really unique microcosm. So when you combine like financial privilege with the fact that a lot of these people, you know, LA is probably the most diverse place that most of these people have ever been. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you get people who are like, oh, this is exciting to finally meet a Black person. Let's see. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think for me personally, it's more of a romantic cesspit. It's not really. Cesspit? Place where poo-poo
is
kept.
I like cesspit. I love cesspit.
It's just like, I don't know. As a Black person, I think that, and there's also like very few, there are very few, like you said, Black people doing improv. And I don't know. I don't see very many Black relationships in improv. Like, I don't think I've seen any actual in the improv world. Mm-mm. Black relation. I don't think I know of any. Can you think of any?
Yeah. No. No. I truly cannot think of a Black person with a Black person. There isn't enough of us.
And you have come from New York, and I've been in LA, and we've both been around for a long time, and the fact that we can't think of that is bad.
It's mind-boggling. I've been doing improv for, oof, my God, for 12 years now. And yeah. I can't even think of it. That's crazy. Oh, my God, I've been doing improv for 12 years.
Well, you don't do it so much anymore.
I don't. I am, and also, as much as I make fun of improv, I've never loved anything more than improv.
I also love improv, but certain, like Benetton, RT, I love, but Benetton is like the, I mean, I love my old Harold team, but there is, the freedom I feel on Benetton is like no other. Like, that I think is what the world could be like if there was actual equality. It's just like everyone feels very free.
Yes, I think you were at our DCM show. Fuck, I can't remember the specific, but it was just like an Uber and a white lady complaining. And I have never laughed harder on stage at like people literally making fun of the audience to their face. Because it was like pretty, it was like Black, brown people, but then a lot of white people because improv is a white space.
Yeah.
And they were like guffawing at us being like, hey, Becky. And I was like, I was like, you're laughing, but are you listening? Because
right.
We're literally, comedy, it's like I did an interview with Conan where I was like, if you love Chris Rock but didn't realize that racism exists, if you listen to Dave Chappelle and didn't realize racism exists, if you like Michael Che and didn't, if you like me and didn't realize that this was awful and we live with this every day, you weren't listening.
No.
Like if you like Beyonce and you loved Lemonade and you didn't realize that she literally says that Black women are the most disrespected women, like you weren't listening. It's so crazy to me that a lot of white people are like, I'm here.
I know.
I'm listening.
It's kind of crazy because it's like it took this awful thing to recur, but also to recur on film for us to, for people to believe it when you're like, Black art has been, it's not like it's been, it hasn't been shielded. I mean, NWA have a song that's literally called Fuck the Police.
Fuck the Police.
It talks about racial profiling and things like that. Like KRS-One has a song called Sound of the Police, which is, I would say listen to it right now. It's an entire history on race and where we've come from and slavery to police. And it's like, it's not like we hid it from anyone. We kind of kept saying, guys, this is a thing. And everyone was
people go, this is a fun beat. I like this.
Right, they're like, whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the place.
Yeah, and it's just like a jazz standard. Billie Holiday's Strange Fruit is literally about lynching. And it's like, are you not listening?
I find that song so beautiful, but so hard to listen to. It's so hard to listen to.
It's so upsetting to listen to.
Yeah.
Also, like the news has been really upset. Like, I think white people just don't understand. It's like we get to like wake up, roll over, open Twitter, and then watch another Black person get killed by the police or another white person scream at another Black person. And like 2 weeks ago, I mean, I feel better. I'm in like a more zen-like place. I'm still trying to like figure out how I'm funny again because I don't feel super funny right now. But I was like, you don't understand that like it weighs on your heart every fucking day to like wake up to another fucking thing. But then you get funny things like Nancy Pelosi and kente cloth doing some performative allyship. Girl, I screamed.
Oh, poor Nancy. But what could they do? They were giving it to her. I mean, it's like, they couldn't have said no. That would have been really bad. But it was so ill-conceived. I will say, though, I'm with you. It's like, it's inescapable and It is it, like we have to see it. But I think as Black women, you also feel even deeper. Because I think about like, you know, we if that was my kid or my brother, like, I don't know, there's just like this deeper feeling. But you're right. I mean, memes will help you get through it. And I will say, yes, Karen should be called terrorists. They are. But sometimes I feel like the Karen thing is a way of sort of making fun of, like, it can be funny. I mean, not what they're doing, but I think that people are able to come together and find some levity in it. Even like the Amy Cooper thing, horrendous, not funny at all. But some of the memes that came after it were so funny. Spectacular.
I will say this, like, Black people, it's been going on for years. Hundreds and hundreds of years, but like we still figure out how to be funny and uplift and change the culture and shift the needle. And I love being Black. And I think a lot of times when people hear Black Lives Matter or like I'm Black and I'm proud, they're like, well, how come I can't say I'm white and I'm proud? I'm like, because the whole system and the whole culture already celebrates that. We have Black History Month. You guys get Black History or White History the rest of the year. So it's like, and then you whitewash it, and it's hard.
And white is seen as normal, right? Like I even see, and I really do appreciate, because I know I can be a cynic, but I really appreciate that people are posting and talking about it and trying to change. And I have friends that are doing anti-racist workshops in groups and trying to like figure things out. I think that's really brilliant. But I will say that still the narrative around, even people who are saying like Black Lives Matter, the narrative is still we're the normal ones, but those different people also matter, guys. Like, I won't lie and tell you that I don't feel, I feel very objectified. Even like I feel objectified and said, and still treated as a group of outsiders. It's almost like it feels some of the narrative feels like, guys, listen, the aliens can live among us and we'll all be fine. And it's like, listen, I know you're trying, but I wake up and do the same shit you do. I wake up in the morning and sit on my squatty potty and do a shit and scroll on my phone and, you know, go in my, like, I speak to my mom and my mom gets on my nerves as well, just like you. And like, it's not, even that, like, I think it's still seen as like normal. And I think that's what we have to keep working towards, of being like, there is no default, even though we've been told the default is white.
The only thing I'm like super, super hopeful about is like our friends who are white, who have kids, I think those kids will be raised in a way where they're anti-racist. But I think people need to be like, you can teach your kid to be anti-racist, but you also have to explain to your kid when they're in class and their Black classmate Freddie gets called, you know, nappy headed, your kid can't just be quiet and go, that was wrong. Your kid has to out loud go, don't do that to Freddie. That's not nice. Freddie's hair is different than your hair. How would you feel if I called you strawhead? You wouldn't like it.
Yeah.
So it's like there's good allies and there's active allies. And I think
I'm hopeful.
Me too, Kirby.
Because I also think that, like, what you were saying is about the kids is, you know, I think the majority of people we know, we are one of their Black friends. We are probably one. We are probably one. You and I cross over, so we are.
Yes.
Two. They may have two Black friends, or they may have whatever. Yes. Like, but we have multiple white friends. But I think that, like, maybe as people are becoming more aware of that, like, I don't know, take a look back at your wedding photos and see what that landscape looks like. And I think as you become aware of that, then you will. You know, because you can't just like be like, oh, shit, I'm going to drop all these friends. I mean, you can make an effort, but I think like you can start to make an effort and see where those patterns are. So like when you do, if you do have kids and you take them to school, because I know we talk so much about like millennials and Gen Zs. And I do think that those people, those like the movement is always young, I think. I think movements happen from younger generations. But I do think that the people who are in their 30s and 40s or even late 20s, whatever, whenever you're having kids, people who are having kids can be more aware that like it's implicit bias is the reason why when I start my kid at school, I immediately make friends with the other white mums rather than going and talking to the Black mums. So then my kid now is like, this is normal. So I think it's up, like that's also a way that you can be active. And an older generation is going like, oh shit, everyone around me is white because of X, Y, Z, but that doesn't have to be the same for my kid.
Yeah.
Wow. Speaking of kids and dating.
We brought it back full circle. After you date, you can have a kid. But Kirby, truly, I could talk to you for hours and hours, but we've come to the end.
We have. Oh, man.
I usually ask all of my guests, I think I've missed it like four times, but would you date me?
Of course. Oh, my God. I should be so lucky.
Thank you, Kirby. Oh, also, I have to say this. So you're in Cruella, and I think I auditioned for that part. I don't have a good English accent. And then after my audition, I was like, my friend Kirby's got an English accent because she's English. And they were like, we love Kirby. And then like a month or two later, it was like on deadline that you got it. And I was like, they made the right choice.
Oh,
I
mean, Nicole, that's so nice. See, that solidarity. Thank you for giving me a shout.
Well, it's just like, I used to be a person who was like, only one black is allowed at the table, or not like that was in my heart. It was just what I was told, and that's what I believed. And then the longer I've been alive, I'm like, oh no, there's room at the table for everybody. And you're part of the, you might have to step back from the table to allow someone else at the table. And it's like, I don't have an English accent. I can't do that part. So why would I be like, oh, I hope I get it. I won't say anything else about it. I was like, no, no, Kirby.
Thanks, Nicole.
Oh, boy. And I think we can all uplift other black women because it's tough. It's tough for us.
Yeah.
And a lot of times I think about all the things I've had to do to create my own space because I wasn't allowed in a space, or like, was like, no, you can't have that. You can't have this. And I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'll fucking do like a podcast. Like doing a podcast was like a reason to do it was like, oh, well, let me give myself a platform to talk about whatever the fuck I want to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like pulling each other up, I think that's good.
I think that's great. And I think you're doing great because this podcast are a very white space and this is an amazing podcast. I love it. I won't be ashamed to tell people that I asked to be on here because I love it.
Well, Kirby, to be fair, I've asked you so many times to be on it, but you truly have been, I'm honestly so happy and so proud of you. It's just nice to see a black friend fucking work.
Same.
And like do good work. You know
same,
what I mean?
Nicole. I
I've never watched you and
you.
Been like, well, Kirby, you shouldn't have gotten that. It's like, no, you did all the work to be ready to work. And you're so funny. And I truly adore you. And
I adore you, Nick.
I hope this corona goes away so I can see my friends
again. I know,
again.
We can hug in person. Also, someone give us a job together.
Yes. Oh, that I would love. I truly would love that. That would be
would
the best.
That. Yeah, I would love that.
Do you have anything you want to promote? I know that life is tough and nobody's really been working, but like, do you have anything that's like coming out that you know of?
I don't, but what I will promote is two apps that I recently really like. One is called Black Owned Everything. That's a Instagram page. And the other is called Black Wall Street, which is an app where you can find lots of Black owned everything in your area.
That's great. I fucking love that because I just was truly in crisis because I was looking for hair products that were black owned because I thought, because you got brands like African Pride and Cantu and Shea Moisture where you're like, ah, thank God, black owned business. And you're like, oh,
they're not.
Black people don't own this.
No. I'm going to send you a list. I have a list of some and I posted it today, but I'm going to send it to you. Also, I know Design Essentials is black owned and Atlanta based and they have amazing products. I've been using them for the last like 3 years, but I will send you the list of actual black owned hair companies.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I found one called, oh shit. It has the best, oh, it's like Uncle Funky's Curl System. And the name made me laugh so hard, but then their packaging was so cute. And I was like, oh, okay, Uncle Funky's. And I was like, I love us. I love that someone's like, I'm going to name my company Uncle Funky.
The
and I
funniest
said,
people.
The funniest
people.
Fucking
black
people.
Twitter
I love
on,
us.
On Reddit is the funniest shit I've ever seen in my entire life.
Black Twitter. My God.
It's crazy.
Well, if you like this episode of Oh, Why Won't You Date Me, you can like it. You can subscribe on iTunes. And if you write me something nasty to hit on me, I will read it out loud. This nice person said, I want to shrink down to the smallest size possible and climb that booty. It will be known as the greatest expedition known to man. I'm only 16 episodes in, so I don't know if you still read these, but I wanted to leave one. Hey, friend, I still read them. Thank you, Kirby.
This has been a Team Coco production.
Hey, Keurig coffee drinkers. Need a cold coffee with a bold flavor? Dunkin' Cold K-Cup pods were specially crafted for cold coffee. Brew over ice straight out of the Keurig coffee maker for smooth, delicious Dunkin' taste you know and love. Find your next Dunkin' Cold coffee in the roasted coffee aisle.
Love the flexibility of working in all sorts of places? Well, working on the go seamlessly requires a strong network like T-Mobile. We have America's largest 5G network, so whether you're on a video call at the park or uploading large files at the coffee shop, we have the 5G speed you need. Whatever takes you on the go, T-Mobile's got you covered. Find out more at T-Mobile.com/network today.
Coverage not available in some areas. See 5G device coverage and access details at T-Mobile.com.